Mics are hot. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Growing Efficiency Podcast, episode 171. This week, we have the Land Race Preservation Society. Thanks for joining us, Patty.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We also have Marty.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
We got Roger. I guess he's having...
Mike Rogers.
Rogers muted.
We got Mr. Green Jeans.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
What's up, Mr. Green Jeans?
How are you, Marty?
All right. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? You have a pretty unique set of genetics that you breed and are working on adapting quite a bit of natural land races from around the world. It's a really, really cool thing that you're doing and something that we need to have, especially given the patent wars and, you know, the scarcity of some of these genetics. You know, there's some, you know, extinctions going on in you know, a lot of the different cultivars because people aren't growing some of these older, longer term growing stuff that people used to grow. You know, there's quite a few smells and tastes that I can remember from high school that certainly I don't remember the last time I tasted them because people have just bred away from them, you know.
For sure.
And, you know, this long, you know, Dr. Greenspoon and some of those other, you know, 18, 20, 22 week strains, you know, people just aren't growing anymore. Everyone's switching to the 7 to 19 week stuff. So what are, you know, tell us a bit about what you do and what you're passionate about.
Well, so basically we founded the Land Race Preservation Society to, like you were saying, to preserve and acclimatize as many, we started with, our Himalayan cultivars because, our area lends really well to, acclimatizing them. And they're fairly easy when it comes to land races, like, intersex wise and, you know, it's easier to eliminate the negative traits I found in those cultivars, at least up here when you're doing the outdoor selections. I think indoor is pretty much the same with, I mean, it swings, the pendulum swings. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of working with Southeast Asian genetics for, I'm sure, obvious reasons for anyone who's had experience with the, you know, any Thai or Vietnamese or Cambodian stuff.
What are the issues for those that aren't familiar?
So, well, aside from incredibly long flowering times, you have plants that will, you know, appear to, so out of a 24 week flowering period, you know, you might get through half of that and you'll be just sailing through. And then all of a sudden, you know, an entire branch decides to become a male. And so you have, half a year basically dedicated to, you know, this one, particular, cultivar that you're working on. And it can be extremely frustrating and disappointing and heartbreaking. You know, when you think you've, you know, you think you've isolated this, you know, the perfect pheno. And so you go to run it inside and it's just a complete shit show. And, so yeah, I mean, intersex is probably the most difficult, factor when you are working with land races that have never been, grown either at our latitude or, in an indoor environment before. That's gotta be 100% the number one, issue people face. So I always try to tell people if they're, you know, purchasing, you know, seeds for, you know, a cultivar like that, just be prepared for, you know, just be prepared for what comes with the territory and, you know, yeah.
What are some of the other unique challenges that you've run into, you know, growing land race cultivars? I didn't mean to interrupt your speech there in the beginning.
Oh no, that's all right. Some unique challenges. Just being able to work with the amount of the numbers needed to do the selecting that is required to get the expressions, isolate the expressions that you know, are desirable to modern Western growers and breeders, because people are definitely looking for a specific, you know, out of an Afghan line, let's say, like, you know, people are looking for specific things, or they think they, you know what they're looking for when they start digging through a, you know, a specific Afghan land race. But so it's just working with the amount of numbers that you need, and most people don't have the space or the plant count or the time to really do the digging they need to find the standout keepers to you know, isolate the traits that they're going after. It's just time and space, really. Time and space and plant count. So laws are also a huge hindrance to this work. You know, I mean, there's definitely some unique challenges that this this kind of work presents you with when you decide to dive in.
So is there any cultivars that you tried to work with and maybe ended up just hitting a dead end or weren't able to work out in terms of land races?
Yeah, there have been a few, for sure. I was trying to release our Highland Thai in pure form for probably 5 years. I was trying to get, you know, get workable enough indoors to where the intersex rate was manageable at least. And so that it was, you know, I could reduce the flowering time to, you know, maybe 5 months. After many, many, many failed and frustrated attempts at that, I had to throw in the towel and turn the seeds over to somebody in Hawaii who has the climate and the space and the patience to and the love for especially the love for that particular cultivar to really take it to where it needs to go. Because you know, if part of the difficulty with that work is we were doing it in a greenhouse, so you know, we were already getting weird expressions from the environment, and then we were doing the indoor selections after we'd kind of, you know, thought we'd smooth things out outdoor in the greenhouse. When we brought it indoors, it was just basically starting from scratch, and it was incredibly frustrating. So we turned that project over to another member of our collective, and he is happily working it right now in Hawaii on the Big Island. And you know, if he's listening, he knows who he is, and we are very grateful for his work he's doing with our Southeast Asian lines. So
sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to say, in just to clarify a little bit, I feel like it's important to say that you know, the reason that you're, maybe not you, but in general, a lot of times people that are after preserving land race, it's a really different mindset. Steve alluded to it a little bit, in that, you know, it's not necessarily something you're doing trying to turn a profit, but just preserve the genetics in their pure form.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, that's definitely, there's not a ton of money to be made in this kind of work. So, like, you really have to, it's something you have to kind of be a little crazy and passionate about and obsessed with to really, you know, be successful, I think, in preserving some of it, especially some of the more difficult to tame lines. But
sure.
You know, I inherited a very large seed collection from my father when he passed away. And it, you know, he's the one who kind of instilled in me the curiosity and the passion I have for this kind of work. And you know, for quite a while, he and I worked hand in hand to he taught me a lot of what I know. And so, you know, it's basically, it's making sure that the gene pool stays intact, because we are not, I was going to say slowly, but fairly rapidly at this point with legalization taking hold, we are slowly bottlenecking the cannabis gene pool to the point where, you know, we are going to be facing some of the same issues we had when we started hybridizing corn and other of our cash crops. I believe there was the corn fiasco in the 1970s, where farmers had to, there was a major effort if somebody has more knowledge about this, feel free to chime in. But so basically there was a blight affecting corn crops in the United States, and it was decimating these farms. And so what they had to do is come up with a new F1 hybrid of an older seed stock that hadn't been hybridized, and they were able to go back and reinfuse some of these resilient genes from some of these older lines create a strain that was able to withstand this blight that was affecting corn crops around the country. And it's that kind of thing that is going to be very difficult to do if all of these genetics disappear. And
well, it'd be impossible, right, in terms of like what to replicate what they did, because they went back to non-hybridized seed stock. Right. And if nobody's growing it and nobody's making the seeds, then nobody has it. And really, whether you're talking about the reasons why you want it may be different. Maybe you're like Mr. Green Jeans over here who loves to, breed plants and put them together with specific traits. And how are you going to be able to find a pure genetics that you want to cross with something else to get exactly what you want if they're all crossed with something else already? So even if you're looking at it from a connoisseur standpoint, you the value of having those pure genetics is still very high for in my opinion.
No, absolutely.
Those chemovar and terpene profiles that are totally not found anymore in most of your modern cannabis that are still found in a lot of those land race. And that, to me, we don't even know what the medical values are, and there could be something, the next CBD or alcohol bonded cannabinoids or any of some of these other stuff that really can be mined out of these that needs to be studied.
Well, yeah. And I think, Bam from Coastal Seeds put it well when he said, this is at the 2013 Emerald Cup, I believe. I heard him, he was giving a talk, and in fact, this was at the very beginning of the Open Cannabis Project, and all when we were all wide-eyed and hopeful about what was to come before all this Phylos shit started. And but he said, You can take blue and yellow and make green, but you can't take green and make blue and yellow. And I think that like sums it up really well, because, you can do back crossing if you have the original, one of the original parents, and you can do certain things to try to reclaim certain traits that you've lost. But ultimately, unless you have that pure stock that's been preserved and open pollinated, and so you have all the potential expressions that you can, keep, you will end up losing the unique traits of that plant that made that plant so valuable, and that were developed over hundreds, if not thousands of years in certain areas by farmers, selecting from a very, very, very large population of plants. So
What traits do you look for in landrace plants, maybe for good potential breeding plants that might be different than what, say, traditional breeders look for in terms of males and females?
It just depends on like what stage of a preservation project we're in. So we cast an extremely wide net at first. So we basically start by eliminating. We start first by just doing an open pollination, of everything. And then we collect the seeds from the plants that we can't find any like obvious, you know, undesirable traits in. So no intersex traits, you know, et cetera. Super late finishing times. So if we're trying to do an outdoor acclimatized line, let's see. So, I mean, that would be, that's the first step. And then as we kind of narrow things down as we go, but resistance, especially, you know, we're working, outdoors up here in the Northwest, you know, we have rain and mold to contend with. And, you know, a lot of times we're trying to create, dig out those genes that will, enable the growers in the northern latitudes to grow out, you know, some of the, longer flowering sativas, at their latitude without them molding out, you know, even if it's finishing in, you know, mid-November with a little snow on it, you know, there are expressions out there that will allow you to do that. And it's just about finding those. Resistance, bud structure, eventually when we get to that step, that's definitely something that's taken into account. Resin production, things that make it desirable for, you know, that are going to make it fun for somebody to grow, that also retaining the characteristics that the old heads are going to, you know, when they smoke it, they're like, oh yeah, this is, you know, whatever this is, you know, this the Buddha Thai stick I smoked in, you know, 1979, like I recognize this terpene profile and, so it's a very long multi-step process of narrowing down, and we keep large amounts of seed from each step. So if we have to go back, if we're like, no, we fucked up, like that wasn't, we thought that was a trait we wanted to follow, but it turned out that was, you know, recessive, and we are unable to find it in these subsequent generations and so on. And so, yeah. And so depending on what a grower is looking for, or a breeder is looking for, we can kind of go back into the freezer and be like, okay, well, these, you know, the F3s looked really good and they had this trait. And if that's what you're looking for, this will help you with your breeding program. And, you know, so, and a lot of people are also just looking for just the straight from the source. You know, they want to do this work themselves. And, you know, so we offer them just the, you know, we'll do breeder packs of, you know, it says 24. We usually throw in, you know, 40 or so seeds, just so people have a chance to find, you know, what they're looking for. So, you know, it is a long process, and it, you know, it varies depending on the cultivar we're working with, but, yeah.
I was going to add, you know, especially outdoors, of course, it's a really long process because, you know, you have to wait a whole year for each generation. And that is, you know, one of the advantages about breeding indoors. And I was wondering, you know, what thoughts you have about doing parts of those projects indoors and, you know, trying to obviously trying to work with day length things to match to outdoors and things like that. I mean, if you think it's... Would you be able to get any use out of any have you know, indoor situation?
Same question for light deprivation. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Like we definitely like that is one of the things that once we feel like we've gotten it stable enough, we move the program indoors. We start our indoor selections, but we instead of trying to match the photo period of the region it's from or trying to mimic the outdoors in any way, we'll run some on 24-hour veg cycles. So we try to match what the average, you know, home grower is going to be, you know, utilizing photo period wise in their setup, climate wise, et cetera. You know, because ultimately they're going to be the ones who are growing it, and these seeds don't come with special instructions on, you know, I mean, I suppose they could, but you know, like ultimately, you know, when people are buying these, they're going to either grow them on 18-hour or, you know, maybe 16-hour, you know, veg, but 16 to 24 hours is generally what we test them at. And then we'll do decaying photo periods for some of our really longer flowering sativas. So, you know, we'll start off at like, you know, 11, 13 and end at like, you know, it just depends, but usually around 10 hours of light.
Love it.
Yeah. So that's, yes, indoor, the indoor stuff is extremely valuable too, because there are people in parts of the world where it's either illegal, highly illegal still, or their climate just will not lend to growing anything other than autos. Like no matter how much digging we do, you know, although we have found, to our friends at the Indian Land Race Exchange, there are a couple members who have been going up to Siberia recently and doing some hunting, and there's some pretty interesting auto stuff coming out of there right now that we're going to start playing around with here in the coming seasons. So yeah, something to stay tuned for. These Siberian land races are interesting, very resinous, like super resinous, and fairly tall, very narrow leaf. What's that?
I said, go on. Super resonant. You gotta pay attention.
Yeah, very tall, narrow leaf is pretty cool too.
Yeah. So they have a lot of those narrow leaf traits, and like generally from the smoke, it's. I would say I don't have any testing on these yet, but I would say by the smoke, I'd say it's probably about a 1-to-1 or thereabouts ratio. So I definitely think there's a lot of potential in there for not only hunting the pure stuff, but, you know, outcrossing to, you know, let's say like a super long flowering, you know, maybe even a haze or, you know, I'm brainstorming a lot of projects right now in this area because I've been, you know, ever since finding out about these Siberian lines and with everything going on in Alaska right now. And, you know, there's definitely a need for northern cultivars that can finish in climates like that and still produce well and provide growers, commercial growers, with the resistant plants that they're looking for, you know, an environment.
And obviously, outdoors in Alaska is going to be pretty tough sledding. So,
yeah,
thinking probably most of their stuff's got to be indoors at the moment, and a lot of that, like you're saying, is due to, you know, the genetics that are available on the market aren't going to work where they are at, just based on the amount of sunlight that they get and weather patterns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the 24 hours of light or thereabouts, you know, that do make it challenging. I mean, if you're growing photoperiod plants, like, you'll definitely grow some gigantic plants during that summer, but unless you have a greenhouse to finish them in, it gets a little tricky. So, you know, there are a lot of Canadian breeders who are doing some really cool stuff with autos right now. I am not super familiar with some of their work because it's not really an area I have focused a lot of attention on, but there's definitely, you know, been, you know, a lot of progress made over the last even 10 years with autos. And there's still a huge demand for, you know, some solid commercial, hardy outdoor commercial varieties for areas like Alaska and, you know, upper Canada.
Probably Maine too, I would think, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was just looking at somebody's farm up there today. I can't remember what they're a DEM pure certified farm up in Maine. I cannot remember what they're called at the moment.
Oh, but, cool. DEM pure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's cool. Yeah, I just assume, you know, like pretty much anybody at, you know, in both of those states have some form of legalization now. So
Yeah.
Maine's totally legal with, and they didn't ruin their medical program when they did their recreational. They got both.
Oh, so they did it right.
Yeah, so far. Well, they were confused.
I think Oregon still has those, but they both suck. So,
well, yeah, exactly. Oregon's been trying to kill the program.
Yeah. They've been fairly successful.
Yes, they have. There are 3 dispensaries in the entire state that are still medical only.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
Told you, Steve. There's only 3. I'm not fucking with you. I've said this before on the podcast. People are like, what, 3? I'm like, no.
Yeah, they're doing that in other states too. Yeah.
Everybody else is a wreck. Like, everybody. And not, like, no shade towards them, but there's fucking 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are left with pretty much no choice. It's like, yeah, we're doing away with the medical program. So if you want to keep, you know, growing cannabis for a living, you have to do this now. So that's pretty much what they did to everybody in Oregon.
You've got to give them money, and you've got to give them money, and you've got to give them money.
Yep. Yep.
See, Michigan's kind of keeping it that way, too. Michigan's going to be similar to Maine, I think, because we talked about that when we were up there at the conference in March, that I told those guys, I said, man, you need to really start lobbying about making sure your medical program. And they said in Michigan, it's more of a, they can't just outright go changing laws like they have. They have to have the people's vote in Michigan. So I thought that
should be a
state by state thing. They can't just say we're doing away with the medical program. Because they have to have a vote by the people of Michigan to do
it. We all remember what happened in Nevada, where the governor had to declare a state of emergency in order to fix the cannabis laws.
That's the biggest stop fucking calling me that I've ever seen. Like you declare a state of emergency just because fuckers won't stop calling you about weed. That's impressive. I applaud you, Nevada. That's good shit.
Up to you, Nevada.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right. So what kind of cultivars do you focus on growing? You have quite the long list here on your website. It's pretty awesome. You put a lot of work into this. Why don't you tell us about the cultivars that you've been working and are passionate about?
Well, right now, I mean, as you can probably tell on the site, like my focus has really been on our North Indian and Pakistani stuff. We are starting kind of a Mediterranean breeding program right now with our, we have some Greek, some Lebanese, Syrian, and some Egyptian stuff that we're playing around with at the moment. So that's something that we just started, but for the last like almost four years, it's pretty much been exclusively working with our Central American and North Indian stuff. And as well as our Northern Pakistani lines. So it's probably because they're just so much fun to grow up here in this area because they just do so well. And it's exciting to kind of see like the expressions that come out at this latitude and in this climate, because the climate's really similar. And I've never seen plants that just would not mold in the climate that I'm actually looking out the window at right now. Where it is pouring down rain and it is, you know, beginning of October. So,
Oregon all my plants here. It's a little rough for the rain. I mean, I don't have anything outdoors. I just moved, so it's not a concern for me. But obviously, here in Southern Oregon, we have just a few growers, and I know a couple of them, and they're all pretty concerned about the amount of rain we're getting right now.
You know,
significant concern, I would say. Lots of PM. As a consumer, I would be concerned going to a dispensary here in about, I don't know, 2 to 3 months, probably, for some of them.
Yeah, Christmas time is going to be sketchy for buying weed at dispensaries out here.
Don't buy the pre-rolls.
Do not buy the pre-rolls.
Buy the pre-rolls. I would cut off pre-roll use like November.
yeah, that's probably a safe bet. Yeah, a lot of biomass for cartridges is being created right now with this rain.
Yeah, a lot of distillate. So what are some of the next projects that you're hoping to focus on? You talked about working on the Pakistani stuff and some of the Himalayan stuff. What are some of the other ones you hope to work on?
Well, right now, like we just, like literally this week just started, is we have kind of like not really in the forefront because there's been a lot of people doing other stuff with the Afghan lines, and like they're doing some really good work. So like Afghan Selection on Instagram, that's his handle. It used to be, it's like Baba 69 something or other. He used to have the handle. It was like Afghan Kush Black Honey. Really nice guy. His name's Haroon. He is based out of Mazar-i-Sharif. He's went to school to study journalism. Then the war happened, and he the recent one, not the Soviet one, but So he's around the same age, and you know, he really passionate about getting cannabis tourism reintroduced to Afghanistan, and he's been sharing all of his seeds from all of his favorite cultivars and regions with, you know, the online cannabis community now for the last couple of years, and the response has been amazing. So what we have been doing is we have some of our older selections from the 60s and 70s that were collected by my father and his friends during that time on the hippie trail. And we've been working these lines for an incredibly long time. So these are solid, you know, as solid as we're comfortable narrowing them down to. And so we've taken some of our favorite cuts, and we are working on a feminized packs for home growers who want to try these out, you know, who are maybe limited by plant count, like in Oregon, where you can grow 4 plants. So it doesn't really lend well to growing from seed, because it's not 4 mature plants, it's just 4 plants in general, like total. So, you know, and I know in other states they have similar, you know, repressive plant counts. You know, if you're
which
trying
is about to, the only value left in having a medical program at this point is that
exactly
a card, you can grow 6, ooh, you get bonus flower plants.
Exactly. You can have your veg room and your flowering room.
Yeah, you can have veg plants at the same time. If I'm correct, I think it's double the amount that you are registered for. So if you can have 12 flowering plants, you can have 24 veg plants.
Yeah.
And then you can have as many under a foot tall, so clones, basically, as many as you want. So that's the only value left for like a medical card, really, unless you count the 2 extra plants that you get for flowering, but it costs you like $400 or some shit. So
it's $400
a plant. Fuckers. Anyway,
so I mean so the feminized seeds, like, that'll, you know, like we haven't up until now like released any feminized stuff, just because I have never been a huge fan of, you know, the feminized seed craze that kind of swept the seed community in the early 2000s, late 90s. But with the laws that have passed recently, like we were just talking about, there is a lot of value in someone being able to, you know, if they don't want to grow, you know, from dirty cuttings from a dispensary, well, they can pick up a pack of seeds you know, get, you know, at least, you know, 90% female plants. I would never say they're 100% feminized, because that doesn't exist, but you know, you'll receive stable, you know, intersex free feminized seeds, or feminized female plants, from these, and you'll be able to, you know, see if it's a line you want to work with. And if it is, then we also have the, you know, the regular seeds in breeders packs, and you can do all the, you know, experimenting. And because the whole point is to get people breeding with this stuff, because if people don't, then they're gone. So like when people buy them, you know, we encourage people, don't just keep them in your freezer, you know, like do an open pollination, then put, you know, set aside however many of those in your freezer, and then, you know, play around with these seeds, like find your favorites. You know, if you don't like this line, that's okay. Like you decide that early on, and then, you know, hold the seed stock, share those with people who might enjoy them, and move on to something else. Like the whole point is to, you know, get people growing these, get them out there, get them into the gene pool, so we do not lose them.
So that's way cool, man.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Great stuff.
That's what all our friends are doing. Mr. Green Jeans does that. Vision does that. The guys out in the Northwest in Canada do a lot of sharing a land race for that very reason. So they can get it back. Like Mr. Green Jeans has a great story about his cherry bomb, how he gave it away and then they lost it and he didn't have it. And then a guy gave it to had been breeding it and gave it back to him. So
it's like backing
that's
up your
awesome.
Computer, man. It's like
that's
backing
awesome.
Up your computer. Very cool.
Yeah. Open source, man. It's great.
Well, this is always a good
the only way
to ask people, what do you look for in a male? When you're looking for the right male when you're phenom hunting?
Well, that is, again, like that's can be fairly cultivar dependent, I'd say, in general. Like if we're working a longer flowering line, I will select the earlier flowering males, but it's generally the opposite. You know, I'll look for a male that is, you know, I'll pretty much cull any male out of the population who is showing his sex, in veg. Obviously, like that's a undesirable trait. So, you know, the later flowering males, earlier flowering females, you know, any male that's putting off a lot of stink, has a strong terpene profile, without even, you know, a stem rub, you know, just something that is just a stinker. You know, males that show resin. Ultimately though, like, you know, it's just the trial and error. If it's going to pass on, you know, the traits you want it to pass on, or if it's going to, you know, create shit, then, you know, it's just about trial and error. But I mean, that's a good starting point at least, because if it's displaying those traits that you find desirable, well, that's, you know, a 50-50 chance, you know, well, it's either going to not pass those on or it's going to. And yeah. Structure as well, because the male is definitely going to pass on its structure to the subsequent progeny. So yeah. And any males that have like a nice, really strong floral structure is also something that I look for. And yeah, that's just, you know, it's about numbers, and, you know, you grow out enough seeds and you'll find like just the craziest looking males that are just, you know, you're like, where did you come from? It's like, you're sticking around. You know, especially if he passes on those traits, it's like, you know, that's gold. So we have a lot of
prize followers. Yeah. Definitely with that, always include the maverick boy, the male that's like really kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some really, really, really interesting, you know, male, you know, there are definitely a lot of breeders that post a lot of pictures of their males, but like for the most part, it's just, you know, the bud porn you see online. It's just, you know, these, you know, oozing female flowers. But I think it's, so much cooler, you know, when you see just these. I think AK Bean Brains has some really interesting males in his collection. Cool. Yeah, and he's just got some really, really, really cool males, and he, I believe he ships pollen to people who request it from some of these. So he's got the original Alaskan Thunderfuck and some other stuff, and yeah, nice. Yeah.
That's really cool. And I think that they're, you know, like we talked about, you know, breeders wanting some of these different strains to work with and not really, you know, in some cases, not really realizing what they have until it's gone. I think that in a similar way where, you know, for so long we were chasing just THC and now we're even getting into, you know, chasing just high percentages of THC as necessarily being quote unquote better. When, you know, you still have a lot of people that have, you know, smoked a lot of weed, even as low as like 8 or 9% THC, that still can be really effective in whether, even if you're just looking to get high. And so I think there'll be some interesting swings back to some, like once we get over this, like chasing like 30% THC strains. Yeah. That, you know, maybe we'll get back to like, you know, testing the plant's actual effects and how it really works as opposed to just what its percentages are.
Like the character of the high, and rather than just the sheer amount of THC you're being bombarded with.
Right.
Yeah.
So much more important. You know, it's like high THC is really only good for, if you were limited budget and you have $20 and, you know, the gram or whatever is going to last,
right,
you know, a certain amount of time, really, it's really good.
Right. Like that's
fine. And then you can just put a little teeny crumb in there and get really wet.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the old Prohibition era, you know, like, oh, you know, got to stretch this out.
That's the only time THC counts at all. I swear to God, the rest of the time, you know, if you have five or six jars, you're the connoisseur, you know, you're rarely going to choose the strongest one, you know?
Yeah.
You know, right off the bat.
Especially if it doesn't have anything else, you know, if it's got 29% THC and zero CBD and
almost every strain that is high in THC rarely has anything else. It almost definitely makes the terpene profile one-dimensional. You know, you've got that really strong sort of turpentine, sort of piney, maybe a little bit of peppery thing going on, but pretty much nothing else. If there is anything else, you can't even smell it or detect it under the rest of the, you know, all high THC strains that I've ever experienced are very one-dimensional in the terpene.
I agree.
And
so I think when people start getting over that, they're going to come knocking on your door to be like, hey, you got any more of them land races over there?
Well, I mean, that's exactly why the land races and everything are so valuable. You know, it's because you can combine those traits and stuff like that. And I think going into the future, as cannabis gets to be a lot more available, everybody is eventually has the potential to become a connoisseur, you know? If it's relatively inexpensive and easy for them to obtain, they're going to start collecting jars before they know it. And as soon as that happens, you start really thinking about the different effects. You know, you notice the differences between all the different jars. If you are just going from, stash to stash and you're, you know, on the limited budget, you don't even really have the opportunity to notice differences between the different effects. You know what I mean? So it is really kind of all about being a connoisseur. Not that a connoisseur is somebody who's so special and knows so much, just somebody that's got choices, you know what I mean?
Right.
Automatically, right. As soon as you've got the choices, you're in the connoisseur club and, you know, you get a lot more sensitivity to all the other, that's when all the different, you know, becomes a game of like looking for the most different things, you know, and that's where all the land races and the things that you're talking about are so incredibly valuable. Because
I think it's like a lot of times when you talk to casual smokers, you know, we'll say like people that, you know, maybe are spending their $20 on the weekend to smoke, you know, once or whatever, and they keep, you know, which is fine. You know, you can do that. But I find that a lot of those people are like, all we taste the same to me.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Doesn't matter.
Like, you know, it's whatever. Just give me the $20 worth, and it'll, you know, like it's all the same.
But there's some. You know for sure. There's some ones that'll really knock them for a loop. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know what happens? People get over the whole, hey, weed's cheap now, and then they become connoisseurs as they, you know, kind of burn out on the cheap weed. And I've gone through Colorado, California, Jamaica, Canada, and all these other markets, and I've gone through legalization in all of them now and worked with clients in those markets. And that's exactly what happens. In the beginning, everyone's super happy, and you're always going to have 30 to 45% of the market that just wants their bag of weed. Like, they do not care, because they're not educated enough on why they should care. And what's really interesting is that, especially when you start pairing terpene profiles with what customers buy, you can make super really easy predictions on what they're going to want to buy and what they're going to like to within, you know, 5% error rate. It's kind of stupid, because people really like very specific terpene profiles. They don't realize it, but when you actually look at it from an analytic side, from the other side of the register, it's plain as day. And that's one thing why, you know, why it's so silly to me to see states where people aren't doing cannabinoid and terpene profile testing, is that, you know, you're hurting your sales ability. like legit.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, also, we have to really consider all that stuff in breeding too. You know what I mean? I think that's really important to.
Oh, absolutely.
So what are some traits that you see in some of the landrace varieties that you don't see quite so much in the normal production varieties for people that are a little less familiar with landrace or old school cannabis versus traditional production?
I think the entourage effect is far greater in the landrace varieties, especially varieties that have been selected for resin production or hash production, because they weren't selected individually plant by plant. They were selected out of a field. So you'll end up with high CBD, low THC plants. You'll end up with 1-to-1s and high THC plants and everything in between. So I think the trait that you find the most are these really novel, not common, novel cannabinoids that pop up, like CBG and some of the others, as well as terpenes that haven't really been around in quite some time, because they were they belong to a cultivar that just didn't have the prohibition era selection traits that people were going for, which is just massive yield, fast finishing, and high THC. And that's unfortunately still the mindset that most breeders have. Everyone wants a 7-week finisher. It's like, when's this going to finish? Well, probably 9 to 10 weeks. Oh, but it's a pure Afghan. Well, yes, but traditionally, these are at least usually 10 to 11 week plants. They usually harvest them when it's snowing. And, I think that's probably the biggest thing, is the range of possibilities in a pack of seeds that you get, even like that's been, selected and worked a bit and acclimatized, like you're still going to find, a pretty diverse range of, expressions, even just from one, 12 pack of seeds. So, And especially, okay, so like if you're considering like equatorial varieties, which are traditionally extremely high in THC, just based on the way they select the plants. So they'll be extremely high in THC, and most will have almost zero CBD. And so you'll find that really prevalent in South Indian genetics, a lot of equatorial African stuff, Southeast Asian stuff, especially too. Anything that's been selected for ganja, like for flower cultivation by an indigenous population, they're selecting those by the flower. So like if they're sitting there smoking and they're like, this is a great bowl we just smoked, like they set those seeds aside from that bud, and that's what they end up planting the following year. And so, generations of that, you're going to end up with almost, because they're selecting for high THC. That's what's, you get that. You tend to have, especially with South Indian lines, you generally get the very similar incense, kind of fruity, piney incense aroma generally in those cultivars. And I feel like that's probably because those were originally the plants that contained, the highest THC and were, the most desirable to the people that were selecting at the time. And generally, like, they were selecting for high THC because these were plants that were used, for spiritual practices up until modern times. Cannabis is still a huge part of spiritual, well, just the culture in general in India and the Himalayas and Southeast Asia.
Very cool.
It's a complicated question, but yeah, it's
fantastic.
Well, you see, a lot of land races are grown more for making charas or making, for resin production and not for ganja or flowers. And you're in other parts of the world, they refer to flower production as ganja production versus
right.
Hash production or resin production, or oil production, depending on what part of the world you're in. Or in some parts of the world, they say gum instead of charas. Is there any other maybe unique traits or things that you've found maybe just in your own you know, phenome hunting and seed searching that you've done that you found working with a lot of landrace that really surprised you or was striking or different or unique?
I think, yeah, one of the things that I found really striking is, you know, I think we've all experienced, you know, like getting a clone and, you know, it looked a certain way for like the first two crops that you grew it once you got it. And you got it from another grower. So he's been growing it in his setup for X amount of years and you get it in your setup and it looks the same, kind of starts to look a little different after that second run. And then, you know, a year later, it's a completely different plant and it's a clone. So that I think like most of us have experienced that like adaptability and then like witnessing, you know, our those genetics kind of the epigenetic expression starting to come out after a bit of time. But with the landrace genetics, what I find so fascinating is how quickly they do this. Like literally, so from seed plant to second generation clone, you will have like a 100% generally speaking, especially with the Pakistani stuff I've run, just incredibly adaptable. The clones will be just completely perfectly adapted to that environment within two or three runs. So, I mean, that's definitely something that I found really fascinating, really, really kind of makes you think about, you know, the environment you're putting your plants in and, you know, the stimuli that they're responding to and the expressions that come out of that stimuli. And landrace genetics just tend to have, they really take on the characteristics of their surroundings and the terroir, especially if you're growing them outdoors. So, I mean, because the plants that we grow, you know, like a mile from the beach compared to the plants we grow up in the mountains, like it's night and day, even though, you know, same latitude, just that simple elevation and the slight climate difference at those elevations, like makes such a huge difference in the terpene expression and the cannabinoid profiles that come out. Yeah.
Have you seen any, you know, more increase in twins or any kind of weird vining or weird growth or lace leaf or anything else funky in terms of, you know, maybe more morphology or anything?
Well, I've definitely noticed like in our Chinese populations we've been working through some very interesting mutations coming out. So yeah, like I've had twins, I've had triplets, mainly like a lot of variegation and a lot of basically I would call them albino plants that pop up out of cloned populations. So that kind of goes back to the epigenetics drifting. I want to call it genetic drift, but you know, the adaptations that the clones go through. I've had, you know, I've had plants go from, you know, relatively normal looking girls to, you know, an entire side of the plant is just completely, you know, pale yellow to white, completely healthy, but just, you know, that's what it's decided to express itself as. So, yeah, some interesting, especially in some of the more primordial populations, like up where it's, you know, in China, you know, where you've like Yunnan province, especially Hunan and the Himalayan, like, you know, belt that goes all along southern China. You can find some really interesting, primordial expressions of cannabis that are, you know, you'll find, you know, the wide range of phenos that I was describing earlier, the different profiles and whatnot, and a lot of really interesting mutations. I was just looking at somebody's there's that Australian bastard weed, or you know what I'm talking about, the
ABC.
This has been like an obsession of mine recently. I just think it's so cool. Somebody nearby me was just working with this actually. But it wasn't from that line. It was from something else that they were working, and an expression popped up out of the blue during a breeding project. And it was, it's interesting. And I don't know what environmental triggers bring that expression out, or if it's, you know, where it's coming from. But there are, it's just kind of proof, like, what we have no idea. Like, you know, we've, Westerners have been breeding cannabis the way we've been breeding it for, you know, very short amount of time compared to the rest of the world. And so I think going forward, you know, we're going to be seeing, especially as more people delve into the preservation and the breeding and the working with land races, I think we'll start to see some pretty crazy expressions that, you know, none of us have had the pleasure of witnessing in our lifetimes.
Have you heard about Zamal?
Yes, the perennial.
The perennial. So I have some landrace Zamal. What are your thoughts on that? Have you worked with it?
Can you talk about that? Yeah, I got some seeds from Luis over at Ace Seeds like 10 years ago. Right around when they were first starting to play around with the Zamal stuff. And I have never been able to duplicate the, and I've heard this is actually pretty common, not being able to duplicate the perennial, you know, regenerating trait that the that cultivar expresses at, you know, in its native habitat, or maybe not native, but where it's, you know, acclimatized to. So never had that, had a chance to see it do that, but I've heard, like from a couple other breeders who tried growing it out in Central Africa, were not able to replicate that either, but they got the seeds from plants that were, from La Reunion Island, that were, you know, expressing that, trait. But, so I don't know, like it's kind of one of those things. Like I'd like to,
I wonder if it's a soil microbe.
Well, yeah, it's what some people are saying. Like some people are saying it's the volcanic activity and the magnetic field from all the volcanoes on the island, or it's, you know, it's the, I mean, in my opinion, it's probably just like the way the plants are being farmed there and the climate lending to, you know, rejuvenation happening a couple times a year. You harvest the tops, you know, the plant grows back, grows more tops. And they, you know, the one thing I had noticed that, like, I did do some regeneration in a couple grows, and I did notice that, as like the farmers say on Reunion, like that, you know, after three seasons, the plant is at its peak. So you'll get the best harvest after your third crop out of that plant. So the plant, in my experience, like that line does tend to, like, after two or three runs, you know, harvesting, regenerating, harvesting, regenerating. And that we did that from clones, not from seed plants. So, but yeah, we did notice an improvement in quality after the second run. So yeah, I've never tried that with any other lines though. So I don't know if that's specific to that plant, but I've also read Ed Rosenthal saying that about just cannabis in general. So I don't know.
I've always found that clones, in my opinion, I've found that when I clone a plant, that about the third time I go third run, I get the best results because of the adaptation, like you say, to the environment.
Yeah.
And that's, I've found that to be pretty, you know, for 20 years, I've seen that, you know, if you start cloning, it's that third run on the clone, and it seems to really take to your style of growing in whatever environment it's being, you know, grown in.
Well, what do you look for when you're doing your clone selections, like for a mom, like when you're you know,
the flower that I like the best.
Yeah,
just in general. You know, I work for a seed bank, so I keep going through different ones, and I don't clone a lot. I did for a couple years, but I got tired of it, and everybody was doing the land race thing. So I got some land. So I'm in the middle of starting up doing a little bit of breeding now, which I didn't really care to do before. But, you know, after a while, you just get sick of hearing about everybody else doing this cool stuff and you're not. So, but yeah. I choose clones by whatever, like if I grow three or four different cultivars, or strains, hybrids or whatever. Whatever I like the best is the ones I keep. The, you know, whatever I like the way the plant looks, you know, that's about
yeah.
it. I'm not a big breeder, so, you know, that's where, that's the limit of mine is what I've cloned. Yeah.
Sorry about that. I
thought I lost Johnson. Did my
I keep having some issues with my mute and unmute for whatever reason on my thing. So, is there anything else you wanted to share with us? What are some of the other things that you would recommend to people that are maybe trying to get into breeding land race, or maybe running into some challenges or some frustrations? You know, with their own land race preservation projects.
I would just say, like, don't bite off more than you can chew. Like, it's you're depending on how I don't want to say raw, because these are well worked by the people we, you know, who've been keeping them for all these years, but, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew, because it is a time consuming process. So start with a line that you are passionate about, because ultimately this you have to be in order to, you know, stick with this kind of work. Just find a region that you're fascinated by, you know, a part of the world that, you know, you just, you know, that captures your imagination, and a culture that you find, you know, just, because for me, I studied anthropology, and, you know, it's so like, it's the relationship between, you know, the people and the plant, and I feel like just consuming the cannabis, that in its, you know, in the form that it's been selected, you know, by that specific village or that valley for however many years, like it's such an insight into, you know, what's important to that culture. And it's kind of like a window into, you know, what's important to these people, and helps you kind of relate to them on a certain level that I don't think you really could, otherwise. And because cannabis is in these places, it's such an intricate, part of their lives. It's so interwoven, that it really does give a lot of insight into, you know, what is important to these people. So, but yeah, if you're getting into it, you know, just get inspired and let that inspiration carry you through the project, because that's what will do it. And you will, like, if you persevere, you will succeed. Like, it's just about having patience, and, don't take on more than one project at a time, especially if you're starting off with this kind of stuff. Like, it's really important to just, you know, stay focused, know what your goals are. That's really important, like knowing what your goals are and like what you're selecting for, because you could go off in 1,000 different directions. And yeah, just, you know, don't be discouraged if you end up with some seeded buds, because there's nothing wrong with seeded buds. People have been smoking them for a very long time, and, you know, hash is great too. You know, like, that's, you know, basically, you know, get some good hash making equipment, because you'll be making a lot of hash most likely. And yeah, just have fun and remember why you're doing it.
Awesome. Anything else you wanted to share with our listeners before we I'll let you go?
No, it was a pleasure chatting with y'all today.
Why don't you tell everybody how to find you, your website, your Instagram, and all that stuff, and we'll make sure that's in the description as well.
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram under landrace_preservation_society, and also through old_world_organics_LLC, and the website where you can find and purchase genetics that we've been discussing is landracepreservationsociety.org.
Awesome. Thanks for all the amazing work you've been doing, and keep up the good fight. And, I look forward to hearing what some of our listeners do with some of your genetics in the future.
Well, yeah, me too. And I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Love your attitude. And stick around if you want. Well, as we move the show on, if you want.
Yeah, I'll stick around.
I really appreciate it, man. What have you been up to there, Mr. Green Jeans?
Oh, me? I don't have too much to report. Doing a lot of outdoor growing. Watching a lot of cherry bomb plants flower outdoors here in Los Angeles at 33 degrees latitude. It's awesome. They're getting huge. They're huge. Some of them are big old trees. That's pretty exciting. Not much else. Not much to report. That was a fantastic talk, by the way, Patrick. Really great. Excellent guest we had tonight, huh? I just wanted to add one thing I thought of while you were talking about was the, and I think you were kind of alluding to this a little bit, Patrick, was the that, actually new stuff does seem to kind of appear out of nowhere in terms of smells and tastes, terpenes. It isn't exactly true that, I've experienced that a number of times. I've seen it happen a whole bunch of times, in my experience, that something brand new pops out that, as far as I could tell, wasn't really, there in either of one of the lines that it came from. It was not particularly in the areas of smells, terpenes and things like that. I've definitely seen brand new smells come out, and this is many, many times. So the idea that variability, that we're in danger of losing variability, I'm not sure about that. I think that there has been a lot of carelessly bred stuff, and maybe, a lot of stuff related too much stuff,
Well, we've even seen that with aquaponics as well, where aquaponics seems to activate whole other terpenes that are just not found in soil.
Again, that's exactly right. And it could be something like this, it could be, genetic drift or whatever we used to call it back in the day.
We actually got an email this week from the show last week, or a comment, I believe. I don't remember where it was from, because we have so many different places we upload the show now. I don't know where the comment was from, but it was from somewhere that said, hey, we should do a show just on flavor. And I think that'd be really cool to do just a show on how to increase flavor and things that we've found and things that, other guests have brought up over the 3 years or four, however long that we've been doing this podcast.
Cultivation methods. It's really amazing. One thing I've noticed recently, since I've really been running out of space and setting plants outdoors, literally just into the backyard, to finish flowering, is, how much the quality of the sunlight is so much better than any of the indoor lights. I haven't really used LEDs, and I'm sure they maybe are a lot closer to the sunlight. But when you put plants out and you're not doing anything different, it's exactly in the same container. The only difference is you're setting it outside and giving it sunlight. And after 1 week, the difference in the terpene profile is pretty obvious. When you smell that plant and you know what I mean? It's definitely.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So just that alone, which probably I assume is just ultraviolet light, although it might be also cooler temperatures at nighttime than they're getting indoors, that might help as well. But it's probably mostly the quality of the sunlight, I think.
yeah, And just the adaptations in general, they have to go under or go through to, be in those conditions. After about 10 days, it's pretty striking the difference you'll see and be able to smell, yeah. You know, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I remember people would, a lot of people believe that indoor grown cannabis was better than outdoor, you know. Indo is better than outdoor. It's totally not.
You know? No.
There's no comparison.
The only reason we have indoor is out of necessity. I feel like we'd have a lot more northern latitude varieties for growers if prohibition had never been an issue. You know, we'd have all kinds of cultivars. You know, if we've been doing all this breeding for the last 40 years, but with 50 years with, you know, large populations of plants, yeah. Because I think that's, you know, something you're touching on. I don't think it's careless breeding. I'm sure in some cases that's definitely the case, but I feel like a lot of it is just, you know, people were working with what they had, with the space they had. And it's, you know, if a lot of people can, I mean, I'm sure you guys can all remember the days, and it was like, everyone, you got to keep it under 99 or 99 or under. Cause you know, otherwise you're pushing the limit there to that 5-year mandatory minimum.
Technically, and I just had to have this conversation with someone in Oklahoma, is that if you are so Congress passed a bill in 2014, and that what that bill does is that protects cannabis producers only if you abide by state law. Are you exempt from federal law? If you do not abide by state law, those federal laws apply. So you still, if you're in flagrant violation of those federal laws, or in state laws rather, they absolutely can charge you with that. Even to this day, can charge you with that. You know, 5-year minimum for every 99, or for every 100 rather. I had to explain that explicitly to someone who refused to listen to putting a fence up to stay compliant. It was completely idiotic, but it's just one of those, hey man, you know, you do it by the book or you don't do it. Like if you're going to do it for legal business, like stop fucking around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That surprises me. That just blows my mind. Somebody gets that far into that big of a farm, you know, like I know what your farm you're talking about, and they won't finish putting up the fence. I mean, come on. you got 400 and something plants and you don't have a fence up. You are not in compliance, you know.
No.
I know Steve talked to him, and I don't understand it at all. Yeah. Yeehaw, the Wild West.
Well, you know, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. And that's all you can do. And it is something that, you know, too, if you're a consultant and someone's not abiding by the law, don't be afraid to walk away. There is nothing wrong with walking away from a non-compliant, customer, especially if you're a consultant. There's not a damn reason why you should risk doing what you're doing and risk your livelihood because someone else is greedy.
Because there's no reason for
that whatsoever.
Because like Steve would told us, all the whole point of it is that if as a consultant you're liable to be in, if you're on that property and that grow, yeah, but if you're in the grow, right, I mean, you're pretty much,
oh yeah, I mean, if you're on site, absolutely,
you're liable. So that's why you can walk away if it's not, because you don't want to ruin your life and your license and or your ability to be a consultant, you know, because you never know how the law takes you. If you get arrested, you may be banned from doing that. You know, it's, you never know. So.
Yep. So. That's why you gotta. Why you gotta be careful. So. Alrighty. Well. Anything else there, Mr. Green Jeans? I know you're working on some new lines of seeds.
I do. That is kind of true. Thanks to you. I messed around with your the blue hash, of course. I crossed that. Did you guys ever get any of the seeds of that crossed with White Wizard? Did I give any of those to you, or those?
I think I have a few of them left. Yeah.
And I'll say no, I didn't get any. Yeah.
That would be a fun.
We popped. I think we only had one that ended up not being a male of the six that we popped, or four that we popped. We didn't pop a ton. There was some that we were kind of phenom hunting in, and then some that we just didn't have a ton of money in. So,
yeah,
or a ton of time in, rather.
Yeah,
and you didn't get to finish the experiment either, did you?
Oh well, you know, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
I also made seeds off the Shirley Temple plant. I think I crossed it with a Feijoa Kush male. I don't know what anybody was growing that. My daughter is growing out ones off of your Flow Chem Dog.
Yeah, that's a good line.
No, it sounds tasty.
Yeah, and so I crossed that also with my Feijoa Kush male.
Ooh, those would be really nice.
Yeah, so she was growing those out. She's calling it Couch Dog. They have that up in
I remember those pictures. You sent me those pictures. That's strange.
Yeah, look, they're just huge trees. And she was a little worried that they were starting kind of late up there, and I'm sure, you know, of course they need to finish as quick as possible. But I knew that both sides finished fast. Both sides a little bit, you know, sometimes stuff doesn't start flowering right away, but we'll still catch up and finish faster than something else, of course.
Yeah.
You guys are laughing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I both sides, both the Flow Chem Dog and the Feijoa Kush are like that. So I was able to tell her, yeah, well, when they get going, they'll start finishing up fast. And last she communicated, she was like, yeah, you're right. They're finishing really quick. So I guess they're working out okay in Southern Oregon. But, you know, it's always pretty chancy, you know, taking seeds and genetics and growing them outdoors. Just, you know, it's indoor grown, indoor bred, you know, and stuff like that.
It's a gamble.
And you know, the thing is that I think one reason why my stuff has been successful outdoors, I mean, I bred Cherry Bomb like 13 generations indoors, probably, or 14, before I started giving it out in the early 2000s. And I think the reason is that I've always used like a 16-8 veg cycle. I've never used a longer day length. And so that I'm fairly certain translates better towards outdoor growing. Because if you think about it, there really isn't any place in continental U.S. that has a day longer than 16 something, is there? You got to go up to Alaska.
Yeah, almost none. I mean,
actually, the longest in the lower 48. We had this discussion. We had an argument before. I believe it was 14 and a half hours in the lower 48 was the longest.
Right, it isn't even that long.
That's why I've done 14-10. But by the way, I wanted to say this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Green. It's just real quick to Patrick. When you were talking about photo periods, though, nobody on this panel ever probably veges more than 16 hours of light, and we're more worried about the dark period.
Some commercial stuff we're doing 18, but I would never do more than 20. Yeah. And it blows my mind that people do 24 hours of light on anything. In fact, we've talked about this on the show on both equatorial stuff for genetics I've gotten from Jamaica and CBD cultivars. When I run them on 24 hours of light, they'll throw nanners, like straight up in veg, they'll throw nanners. But if you switch the same cultivars to 16 or 18 hours and give them a nighttime, they stop throwing nanners and they won't herm on you anymore. I've seen that.
People think plants don't grow at night. I mean, they absolutely do. You know what I mean? They grow like crazy.
Well, the root zone is more active at night. You know, that's
there's hormones that are produced at night. there's hormones that are solely produced when the plant's sleeping, the same as a human. We have hormones and enzymes and proteins that are only made while we're resting, and plants are no different. In fact, they're even more reliant on it because their microbial interaction changes dramatically in their internal microbiome. Those ratios change quite a bit from nighttime to daytime. That's what you can even measure that. If you actually check, when you do a Brix test, if you check the pH of the sap from nighttime to daytime, there's even a small amount of change. You see this quite a bit, even in large aquaponic systems. If you check the pH from nighttime to daytime, it'll be as much as 0.4 different, 0.2 to 0.4 different, because of the microbial interactions, just because of the stuff, you know, consuming different minerals from daytime to nighttime and different amounts of oxygen and CO2 and everything else in the water.
And something that we've shared too is I learned this from UK growers who are all love sativas. Okay, they don't really. I don't know why, but I guess it's the high THC. But I was taught years ago, about a decade ago, to when I do a haze or a sativa, to grow it at 12-12 after you get the seedling started and you want to put it in veg, and you do a 12-12 all the way through, and it extremely retards the finishing time, so you can get something done in the 8 to 10 weeks or so instead of 12 to 16.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I was recently at a talk and they were showing how they had quite a wide variety of different cultivars, and almost all of them stopped between day 30 and 40 of growth of flower in terms of vertical growth, which I thought was real interesting. Well, not, you know, bud development, but in terms of, you know, internodal spacing. I thought that was really interesting. That had, you know, pretty radical difference in genetics, and having that same kind of stopping period. Now, I'm sure there are some sativas for sure that don't follow that rule, but it was really interesting to see that kind of uniformity in production strains.
Well, it helps instead of stretching all at once for 2 weeks after inducing flower, it's constantly just adapting and stretching and becomes uniform. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So what about anything else there, Mr. Green Jeans? I know I'm going to see you next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to come out and hang out. I don't know. We'll definitely do a thing. I don't know if we're going to do episodes next week because I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to be on the road. So we're going to see if I can fit them in. Thursday is going to be, we'll see. It's going to be rough next week, but we're going to try. We're definitely going to have some video content. I just don't know if we're going to have normal shows because of scheduling with where I'm going to be. So. And for anyone interested, I will be in Long Beach, California on Tuesday. I'm speaking at 10 a.m. at the California Cannabis Business Association's conference on aquaponic cannabis cultivation. It's put on by the National Cannabis Association, which is really cool. If anyone's interested in checking that out. So it's a lot of fun. And then I'll also be up at New West Summit in San Francisco, or no, Oakland. Next week as well, for those of you that are interested in hanging out or getting together, let me know. I think I'm sure we'll find time to pop over to the Castro Castle and say hi to Wayne and Jeff and the crew over there. And you never know who else we might bump into. There's some pretty cool people we're working on trying to arrange some meetings with, some pretty cool stuff that we're going to be doing while we're in California this trip. And you never know where else I might pop up at. Yeah, I think I'll wait till my segment and then I'll talk a little bit more about what I've been doing.
Maybe you could do a castle podcast again on Thursday night.
That'd be a stretch. We'll see. I'll be in Oakland.
Yeah, yeah. So. But it's the closest you're going to get without being there, yeah.
What have you been up to there, Roger?
We're just still going through our hemp compliance licensing and stuff for my farm. Things are kind of slowing down because of the time of year and all. We're still into, we still had summer-like weather here, hot and humid as hell. But I got great news that I looked at the a projected forecast over the next 2 weeks, and next week it looks like we're going to have 70 degree days and start going towards a nice fall climate, which I am ready for. I got so much work to do, and you can only get so much done in 100 degree heat. So
I feel you so much. We finally got the very first day of 70s in Oklahoma, and it's like a whole, like, I literally just, it was like, okay, this is the excuse I needed to walk for us to go get lunch. Like,
yeah,
far too nice out to stay inside.
But it's going to be beautiful, and that's about it. Just trying to clean up. I'm really looking forward to it because I'm going to get to clean up my farm. We're redoing my greenhouse, and we've not been able to do it because my partner's been just because of the heat not subsiding as it would in the fall normally. See, normally in September, we start getting 70 to 80 degree days. We had two of them, and then it went back up into the mid-90s. And so he's an HVAC guy. So shout out to Ryan. Hey, buddy. He's just been blowing up, you know, with doing AC work because of the summer never subsided. But so we're all excited about getting together and getting my greenhouse back online. And that's the number one thing we're trying to do now. And of course, I'm playing with stuff. I got some nice genetics from our friends of the show, Kaya, Malik, and Wendy going, and I'm getting ready to put them in flower, allegedly. And that's about it. Just trying to take care and hang in there and keep a good attitude amongst all this depressing world that we live in.
Oh, it ain't that depressing. Trump's about to get himself impeached. He literally talked about a bunch of stuff that was pretty impeachable on live on TV today when I watched him. So it was pretty awesome.
Oh, okay. You watched
him? There's a little bit of hope in the world. So, go ahead.
Oh, nothing. I was just saying, oh, you watched him. And yeah.
Well, no, it popped up on my phone that there was a live thing, and I was like, you know what? I could get a good giggle while I'm, because, you know, right. Anyways, I don't want to get into too much in politics.
Yeah, let's not, because
I think that the vast majority of our listeners do not think of Trump favorably, and we'll leave it at that.
But anyway, everything's going pretty good here. The estranged wife has been coming home a little bit more, and I think she's finally, you know, chilling out a little bit. So we're having a lot more harmony here than the last couple, 2.5 years or so. And it's 2.5. You were talking about how long the show was. I was thinking about it the other night, and I joined the show about 2.5 years ago. We're almost at 2.5 years I've been doing it with you guys.
Well, Marty and I have been doing it over a year before that.
Yeah.
For the, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've been doing. I can't get into all the details I would like to get into yet because I have to wait on the press release to go out, but we're going to be doing a big ass project in Africa. One of the bigger projects going on in Africa. There'll be a press release at some point in the next very short while with a bunch more details. But that's what's been keeping me busy and what I've been doing and why I've been zipping all over to all kinds of cool places and hanging out with all kinds of cool people that are going to help us along the way. So that's what I've been doing and why I've been very quiet for a minute. Got pulled into this bigger project with some of the great people we've been working with. And it's kind of snowballed into something that it's far bigger than I could have ever imagined. And it's really cool. So we're going to get a chance to talk about that here in a few weeks, but we'll be doing some filming over there. And once that happens, once I transition over to there, I think we're just going to do live on Thursdays and then do a recorded show on Tuesdays and then get some of the guys. There's a whole list of guests that we've not been able to get because we've been able to, you know, having to do evening shows or weird time zones or like Jorge Cervantes, him and I have played tag more times than I can count trying to get him on the show, but he's in Spain and a handful of other breeders are in Spain that I'd love to get on. Arjan, is in Netherlands. It's a bitch to get him on the show. So there's a couple of other, you know, European people, African people, and other people we'll be working with that will be able to do some recorded episodes and you know, stuff on weird timelines that, and just, you know, more personal interviews. And I think that'll be really cool. Later on, towards the end of the year, beginning of next year, whenever this all, you know, whenever the move date comes, which is going to come sooner than later. So that's what I've been up to. So we're looking at a couple of different countries in Southern Africa that we have different assets in already. And that's what I've been doing. So it's going to be a lot of fun and far bigger than anything I've worked on yet. So I'm super stoked on that.
I'm glad you chose Thursday. I was going to suggest that, and I'm glad you did that. So it makes me feel good. And record it. It's be great because, yeah, you'll only be a couple hours, 2 or 3 hours difference from Jorge's time when you get over there, too.
Yeah. So
that should work out. Yep. Of course, I'm available 24 hours a day. So, you know, I'm always going to be here if Steve allows me. So.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. We're going to do a little bit of our own strain hunting. In a couple of countries. I'm actually talked to the woman that I'm going to go do it with. But once we get set up, we're going to go there, plan out what we're doing. We already have a bunch of seeds and stuff lined up, but plant that out and then go find some local stuff to work on, you know, and then breed that up. And then, you know, work on, you know, crossbreeding up some of those local cultivars, try to find some more THCV cultivars and work on some other cool, unique stuff that we have in the works. Some pretty cool partners and some really amazing people. Again, I gotta keep my tongue tied until the press release goes out, but I did get permission at least enough to say that as much as I was allowed to say today. So.
Yeah. It's like, he's been telling us for like 3 months. Yeah. I got a new thing, but I can't talk about it. It's like, well, don't talk about it.
It's hard when you're like,
yeah,
something that's cool. You know, we have we're looking at, well, I should keep the details, but we're looking at building out a very large greenhouse facility right off the bat, along with some other cool stuff that we're working on. So,
but you can't talk about it. So, moving
on. Well, I once they release the press release, I can talk about all of it.
Yeah, I know that. I just like to mess with you because this is not the first time you hadn't had.
Well, we were supposed to. It was supposed to be out, and then good things keep happening every week, so we keep pushing it back because we keep adding good things. So can't complain when it's good reasons. So that's what I've been up to, and just working on, you know, sourcing beneficial insects in Southern Africa, and working on sourcing all the different. Things that we're used to having here in the Western Hemisphere and trying to find them over there. And what is nice is that, you know, there's a lot of things that are getting pretty expensive in the United States because of the tariffs that Trump has caused with China. Well, they don't have tariffs in Africa with China. So it's pretty nice that a lot of the stuff is actually about a third cheaper when we're pricing out the grow and stuff. It's kind of funny. You wouldn't really think that. So, yeah. And then one last thing here. Well, Marty and I are working on we have the class coming up August, 17th through the 20th. We'll be teaching a 4-day intensive commercial aquaponic cannabis class at Marty's farm in Gold Hill, Oregon, just outside of Medford. We're literally just on the outskirts of Medford. So if you're thinking about coming out there, if not, we will also be offering the class live online for the first time for the commercial course. We go through a whole almost an entire day of microbes and nutrients. And then the first day is basics, aquaponics, cannabis 101 and aquaponics 101 and cannabis 101. And then we do a whole day of design and management and plants, you know, plant training and all the different things like that, and the fish and whatnot. And then we do a day of system design and system, you know, management and, you know, protocols and business stuff and, you know, all the other kind of portions of the, you know, industry that you end up running into, and a little bit on extraction. You know, we'll go through some hands-on extraction stuff. I know Marty's got some cool stuff going on over there. I know we have a couple of other neighbors that he's hoping to get us some access to for some tours of some outdoor stuff as well, depending on what's been chopped down yet or not. So we're hoping to make it a really cool experience. And, you know, we'll have plenty of cannabis to smoke there and You know, quite a good time. We provide lunch, and you'll get a booklet that has all kinds of detailed information as a reference guide with the course as well, and then some shared digital files so that you have for references. And we also cover pest management, microbials. We go over microscope work, how to analyze stuff with a microscope, how to analyze your nutrients, how to dose your nutrients. I know Roger's been through the two-day class. Actually, both of you guys have been through the class, Roger.
Yeah, and I want to say it's an excellent class. And to be at Marty's farm, from what I've seen, it is so beautiful up there in the mountains. And it's going to be awesome. If you guys can make it, this would be the class. It's probably the most informative cannabis business class, business slash cannabis dash everything, including bugs and everything that you could possibly think of going to. And I couldn't recommend it more.
Yeah, and last time we taught it up at Dutch Bloom's farm, that was a lot of fun. We had Mike West show up, and he was really cool. So you never know what other kind of cannabis experts might show up to our class. I know we have a couple that are talking about coming down right now who we'll leave them anonymous, because it's always fun to surprise people. And if not, you know, you can always join us online. We'll be live streaming the whole course on Zoom. So you can check us out on there and buy an online ticket as well. For those of you who can't travel, maybe you're on a different continent, you can happily join us that way. And then we're working on, thanks to a big friend of the show, we're almost ready to launch. We're just 2 to 3 weeks away from launching. We have a bunch of merch we're going to launch on for aquaponic cannabis growing and regenerative farming. And all the proceeds, at least for the aquaponic cannabis stuff, is going to go to just the server costs and everything else. With Zoom, it got a little bit more expensive to host the podcast this year. We also pay to host this, you know, course on video and audio to re-upload it everywhere, so that it's, you know, available on iTunes and everywhere else. So we're just going to use it for that. More than happy to be fully transparent about all of that. And we'll make sure that it gets published up on the website. Maybe quarterly or you know, twice a year or something like that, so that you guys have a transparent way of knowing what's going on with the funds from that. You know, I'm not looking to profit off of it in any way. It'd just be nice if the podcast could pay for itself a little bit. And that's really all we're trying to do. But we had a member of the community really step up, but she's also willing to offer free of, you know, a service for people, you know, breeders or anyone, you know, from the show that's wanting to get their own merch and gear up on there. You know, she can get it up on there, and there's no upfront cost in terms of investment for per shirt. You know, you get your designs, you do it all for yourself, and we'll be able to facilitate that for breeders and friends of the show that are looking to get some representation for their brand and their seeds and all that stuff, that maybe just don't have money for that, you know, to have merch. You know, a lot of us are on shoestring budgets, and she's going to help people out quite a bit. And once the store's up live, we'll get her on the show to talk about it. So it'll be really cool. And we're happy to help and happy to have someone that's part of our community that's trying to help us out as well. And we're very grateful and grateful to be able to help other people at the same time.
That will be cool. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think we'll wrap up the show on that note. Why don't you tell everybody how to find you there, Pat, before we let you go?
Yeah. You can find us on Instagram at landrace_preservation_society, and landracepreservationsociety.org is the site where you can come and check out our genetics and purchase them.
Awesome. Now, there's a lot of people looking for Landrace out there listening to the show that are super stoked to find out about you. About you, Roger?
You can find me, Roger Latewood, at Instagram, Facebook, which I really love seeing a lot more people posting some stuff on Facebook, even though it's the evil Facebook. It's easier for me to communicate being legally blind. And, of course, I run the forums at ilovegrowingmarijuana.com, and you're welcome to come there and share your information. Possibly, if you've got a special category that we would need to open, I even offer that to people. You know, like, I would love to have a breeder category, if I could get some breeders to sign up and start putting their stuff. Now, we have a seed bank, so I don't think that the company would want to allow sales of it, but I think we could have a breeder's, like, a discussion category if people wanted to do that. We've had a lot of breeders on the show, and they've all been great. So, and thanks again, Patrick. You were fantastic tonight. I love your sense of humor and all too. You know, nice to hear people take things real seriously, but have a sense of humor and laugh at things too. You know, so.
Yeah, sorry if I cut you off there. I didn't mean to.
Did you cut me off?
No, I think I cut off Patrick a little bit there at the end. Didn't mean to. I'm sorry. All right. What about you, Mr. Green Jeans?
Yep. I'm at greenjeansgarden.com. Email me. Or I have an Instagram account too. I think it's Mr. Green Jeans Garden.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Thanks, you guys. That was a great show, Patrick. Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
We also need to give a shout out for Marty, who's probably gone to bed. AP Meds at I almost gave his email, but AP Meds at Patreon or at Instagram, and then I'm not sure what is he. Well, he's part of the Aquaponics Cannabis Growers group on Facebook, so that's probably the best way to catch Marty.
Yep, that's also, you can find us. We have over 5,000 growers that grow with aquaponic cannabis over on Facebook, called Aquaponic Cannabis Facebook Growers Group. You can find out, I forgot to mention the class. The website is apmjclass.com. And there's also a link to it in the description as well. And I think that's going to do it for this week. You can find out any of the video episodes on Potent Products YouTube channel, or many other, I think there's three other places we have the video uploaded to now. WeedTube and GrowTube, or whatever the hell the other one is. And then your favorite sound podcast app, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Podcasts, all the different places. Appreciate it. Appreciate everyone's support. I will see you at the California Cannabis Business Association's conference next week. I do not think we're going to have any shows next week. We will have live content on the YouTube channel. I just don't think we're going to have time to do regular shows. We will try our best. If we do have a show, it will be from a cool place. There's some cool stuff we're going to be doing next week. I just need to see if I have the capability and the permission to do live casts and where I will be during normal podcast hours. So we will see about that. No promises. If not, we'll be back again a week from now, and we'll see you guys then. Cheers.